Welcome to The Critique. Today we're examining a narrative around the final hours of Marilyn Monroe, a story where the official record really struggles against this persistent legend. The material, it does a good job drawing you into the compelling discrepancies surrounding her passing. It lays out these conflicting details pretty clearly. You know, the official overdose ruling, right up against theories of political secrets, maybe silencing. This initial framing sets up a fascinating tension. It hints that maybe the truth is far more complex than just a simple medical finding. And it's clear the goal is to explore these differences without, you know, immediately picking a side. It feels like a strong place to start.
Right. That clarity is definitely there, yeah. But I wonder, could we maybe elevate the impact of that contrast even more, right? Right now, it sort of lists the official facts and the legendary points almost side by side. Which is informative, sure, but it feels a bit like two parallel tracks. We're kind of missing that visceral sense of clash, you know? The real friction between what was formally documented and what has just stubbornly stuck around in the public mind, fueling all this skepticism. It's almost mythological. The current approach, it chronicles the discrepancies, but I don't think it fully exploits the inherent drama they create. We want to almost feel that official story cracking under the legend's weight.
Right, that makes sense. Less listing, more confronting.
Pointed comparison. Almost a direct face-off. So instead of just presenting the official record and then, separately, the legend, let's frame each legendary detail as an immediate, maybe unsettling counterpoint, or an ambiguity that directly challenges the official account. This way, it actively emphasizes how these persistent whispers aren't just existing alongside the verdict, but they fundamentally challenge its simplicity, its finality. By really underscoring this direct conflict, authority versus public speculation, we turn a simple comparison into, well, a much more gripping exploration of a contested reality. It deepens the reader's engagement with the whole mystery.
Okay, I like that, making it more confrontational. So to make that tangible, what specific details from the material could we reframe? For instance, the official finding places Monroe alone at 1235 Fifth Helena Drive. How do we put that under pressure right away?
Well, we can instantly juxtapose her supposed solitude with that compelling claim, right? That she made crucial calls to JFK, to Robert Kennedy, about sensitive matters just hours before. This framing doesn't just add a detail. It turns her alleged solitude into a really potent point of contention. Suddenly, that empty house isn't just the scene of a lonely death.
It's potentially a stage set.
Precisely. Potentially a carefully staged backdrop. The very absence of others becomes suspicious in that light.
Yeah, that definitely makes the official account feel less solid. What about the physical details? The scene itself?
Okay, consider the image of her found face down, clutching the phone receiver. It's powerful. Unsettling. Instead of just stating it, we contrast that poignant, almost desperate image directly with the sterile, detached conclusion of an overdose. It forces the reader to reconcile that intimate, visceral posture with the impersonal medical finding. It creates this immediate sense of an ease, you know, a moment where the official story struggles to contain the human reality of it.
And there's that other physical detail, too, the one that really seems to undermine the official line.
Absolutely. We should emphasize how the wildly cited lack of a water glass, especially when there were reportedly empty barbiturate bottles right there, how that directly raises questions about the common narrative, the self-administered overdose narrative. Look, this isn't about outright disproving the official cause. It's about explicitly exploiting the dramatic tension in these diverging accounts. Each legendary detail becomes like a crack in the foundation of that official story,
making its fabric feel unstable.
Exactly, and pushing the reader to confront why these alternative stories persist so strongly.
That really does highlight the dramatic potential. Okay, moving on. The material notes how the housekeeper's account, her story of finding Monroe, shifted.
Significantly. And there was that notable delay before the police were called. This immediately brings up these profound questions about the reliability of everything that happened right after.
It creates this crucial window for, well, potential intervention, maybe even alteration of the scene. The way these inconsistencies in primary testimony are bought up is quite compelling. That's a really powerful point. The act of changing itself undermines the record. So how do we bring that to life for the reader? Where can we make a difference? To really bolster this, I think we should focus on the provenance of each piece of information, especially where a key witness's statement diverges or evolves over time. We need to analyze what the inherent unreliability of initial testimonies, like the housekeeper's, introduces into the construction of both the official account and the subsequent legend. This means dissecting how these inconsistencies, while not necessarily proving foul play, right, how they actively undermine a clear, undisputed narrative. By examining the origin and the evolution of these key statements, we can reveal how the very building blocks of the official record were perhaps shaky from the get-go.
Which creates fertile ground for legend and doubt.
Precisely. This approach turns a simple observation about a changing story into a really powerful commentary on how fragile historical accounts can sometimes be.
That's quite heavy. Does this imply that any shifting testimony automatically invalidates an official record? Or is there a way to integrate that instability into a stronger narrative?
It's more about showing how that instability is itself part of the story, not just some detail to be, you know, smoothed over or ignored. Let's look closely at the section discussing the housekeeper's testimony again. We could elaborate on how a core witness's changing narrative immediately complicates any police investigation. It casts this long shadow of doubt over the initial findings, and it creates substantial space, room for alternative theories to emerge and just stick around.
And to be more specific, how does that shifting timeline affect our perception of events?
Well, for example, we can explicitly point out that the shifting times from midnight to 3 a.m., and then those later revisions, they don't just change a minor detail. They fundamentally alter the critical window of opportunity.
The time frame for what could have happened.
Exactly. The window for events and the response to them. This temporal fluidity, it forces a reevaluation of every single detail that follows. Because if the initial discovery time is unstable, then the entire sequence of events becomes suspect, doesn't it?
Mm.
It's like a historical record trying to set a fixed point in time. But the lived accounts, or maybe their shifting retellings, keep the story fluid, perpetually open to interpretation, to challenge.
That's a brilliant way to frame it, making the instability itself a central character in the drama. What about the delay in calling the authorities? How does that fit in?
Right. Consider the alleged hours delay before police were actually called. What does that specific waiting period suggest? What does it imply about control over the narrative during that critical, unrecorded time?
It suggests, or could suggest, a deliberate pause, a moment where the scene might have been managed, maybe altered, where evidence could potentially be removed or even planted. This further erodes the foundation of a straightforward official account. It invites the reader to question not just what happened, but who might have controlled the early narrative, and perhaps why. It highlights that the most impactful stories are often found not in the definitive answers, but in those persistent questions, the ones raised by the cracks in the official version. Okay, so moving to the third main area, a key theme running through this material definitely seems to be that interplay of celebrity, power, and secrecy, especially with the mention of that missing diary supposedly filled with political secrets and the pervasive idea that Monroe knew too much. The narrative ends, quite effectively, I think, on this enduring suspicion. It doesn't try to wrap it all up with a neat conclusion. That feels like a powerful choice, leaning into the ambiguity that just defines this whole story.
It is a powerful choice, yes, and the facts presented are compelling. But is there maybe a risk that just listing these details might prevent them from fully resonating with those big themes, celebrity, power, secrecy? The material provides the facts, which is great, but it could perhaps more deliberately weave these concrete images into the larger thematic tapestry. Leverage them to achieve that intended unresolved conclusion with even greater impact. Simply presenting the facts, however intriguing they are, might not fully extract the thematic richness that these highly symbolic details offer. We want the reader to feel the weight of these unresolved images long after they finish reading, make them truly indelible.
Right, I understand. So it's about making each piece of evidence
not just a fact, but a symbol. How do we ensure that happens organically, though, not just tacking on meaning?
Building on that, we can look at how each pivotal detail can naturally serve as a potent symbol of the larger mystery. We need to ensure these concrete images, like the alleged missing diary or the fact Monroe was found clutching the phone, aren't just presented as standalone facts. They need to be framed to actively underscore the narrative's core themes, the ambiguity around truth, the struggle between private selves and public narratives, and those enduring questions that power often leaves in its wake. This approach, I think, naturally leads to a more impactful, more memorable ending, one that doesn't just present a mystery, but kind of embodies it through its imagery. By treating these details almost as mythical components, you elevate the narrative beyond just reportage.
That's a fantastic distinction, transforming reportage into an embodied mystery. Okay, so take the alleged missing diary, filled with political secrets. How can we frame its disappearance to achieve that deeper resonance you're talking about?
We can frame its disappearance not just as, you know, a lost item, but perhaps as a deliberate erasure, an erasure of potentially critical information. This transforms its absence into a powerful presence. The very act of it vanishing speaks volumes about what it might have contained and maybe why it needed to disappear. This elevates the diary from just a plot point to a resonant symbol of suppressed truth, and the link's power might go to maintain control. The silence around its absence almost screams louder than any discovered words could.
That's powerful. And what about those physical details we discussed earlier, the barbiturate bottles?
Similarly, that striking image, empty barbiturate bottles beside the bed, explicitly paired with the observation of no water glass sighted in some accounts, that becomes a powerful visual. It inherently questions the straightforward overdose narrative without making an explicit accusation. The juxtaposition of those two elements creates this immediate, unsettling contradiction that just hangs in the air. It fuels skepticism and makes the reader an active participant in questioning the official story. It's not just a fact, it becomes a deliberate visual riddle.
So these details aren't just pieces of a puzzle. They're more like the brushstrokes of the larger, unresolved painting. And the idea of a searched house with that critical window before police arrived?
Exactly. The very idea of a searched house combined with that window of opportunity before the police were called. This isn't just a procedural detail. It's a loaded image. It implies a deliberate act to control the narrative, maybe to remove or plant evidence. This actively plays into those themes of power and secrecy. It suggests a careful orchestration, perhaps, behind the scenes. And it leaves the reader with that pervasive sense of unanswered questions, of lingering doubt. These powerful, unresolved images are what make the story stick, I think. They make the mystery feel perpetually alive. So we've explored how sharpening that contrast between the official record and the enduring legend, really delving into the provenance of those shifting accounts, and powerfully integrating concrete images can elevate this narrative significantly. Focusing on how the details are presented, not just what details exist, can truly enhance the impact and the resonance of the piece. It transforms what could be a chronological account into a much more gripping, thematic exploration.
You've given us some really invaluable insights today, ways to make this portrayal of Marilyn Monroe's final hours even more compelling, more resonant, by reinforcing that mythologist's perspective on the legend and the methodologist's scrutiny of timelines and evidence. The story definitely gains a richer, more complex texture. We invite you to refine this piece, focusing on those ambiguities, the power of those symbolic details, and please submit it back for another critique. Until then, remember, a handset off the cradle and a timeline that won't quite stay still.